Welcome to another edition of Turned Out a Punk. I'm your host, Damien Abraham. Once again, I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved in punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, a bucket list guest, like one of the big guests here, one of the guests we wanted for a long time. And thanks to our friends at Punk Rock Bowling, specifically our friend Vanessa, publicist at Punk Rock Bowling, it is happening today. Milo Aukerman from The Descendants is on the show. What? More on that in 1 second. But first, if you'd like to get in touch with me, you can send an email to turnedoutapunkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on facebook.com/turnedoutapunk. Those are both run by my brother and show producer, Tristan Abraham. He will get the message to me, and we can communicate that way. You can find me on various forms of social media at Left 4 Damien. And if you would like to support the show, the best way of doing that is by telling all your friends, rating this thing on your platform of choice, subscribing to this thing. Subscribing to this podcast is also a way to support it. There's also a Patreon page, patreon.com/turnedoutapunk. I'm uploading content on there diligently. There's stuff going up all the time. There's the merch stuff there. There's a lot of cool stuff over there. So you want to check that out when you get a chance. Also, speaking of support, this show would not be possible without the kind, loving support of the fine folks at Vans. Vans came on board a while ago, said, "You know what, Damien? We like what you do. We just don't want you to have to do it out of your own pocket." So I said, thank you very much. And Vans and House of Vans have been on board for a while now supporting this podcast. So I got to say thank you so much to them. And House of Vans is back. They've just announced an incredible run of shows in Chicago, including shows curated by people like The Breeders and friends of the show, Julian Baker and Converge. Hopefully I will be down there doing some live Turn It A Punk podcast. There's going to be more announcements on that coming soon. So just, look up House of Vans Chicago and see the runtime of events, but it's going all summer. And if you've never been to a House of Vans, it's like some of my favorite shows I've ever been to have been at the House of Vans. I've seen some incredible shows there. Gotten to play a couple incredible shows there myself, but I've seen some unbelievable bands play there over the years. So, thank you, Vans, so much. And check out the House of Vans coming up this summer. Also, I'm going to be doing one in Vancouver coming up, too. So there's lots of stuff coming up with the Vans people. So thank you, Vans, for that support of this show. Oh, well, we are just but a few days from the release of The Wrestlers, the TV series I did for Vice. So I've been kind of frantically working towards that, getting ready for Las Vegas. There's going to be some big stuff happening in Las Vegas. Namely, for the purpose of this show, Punk Rock Bowling is coming up. And our friends at Punk Rock Bowling, and Vanessa, my homie Vanessa, does publicity for Fat Records, but also does stuff with Punk Rock Bowling. She came to me and said, I want to get a couple guests on the show. And I said, great. We didn't have a lot of time, so we decided just to do them in the same week. We were supposed to have a couple more, but, things got a little messed up. But I think we wound up with some pretty good guests nonetheless. You've heard the Youth Brigade episode. At least you should have heard the Youth Brigade episode. And now, surprise, Milo from The Descendants is on the show today. Descendants are going to be playing with us next Sunday in Las Vegas at Punk Rock Bowling there. So come on out and see it. Refused are playing as well. Other days, The Specials are playing. Rancid's playing. It's going to be nuts. There's all these after shows with like Killing Joke and Dills and et cetera, et cetera. It's an amazing event. If you're not in Las Vegas next weekend, I don't know, and you can be, obviously I know a lot of you situations are preventing you from being there, but if you can be in Las Vegas and you're not there, I can't help you. You got all this wrestling stuff happening and you got this amazing Punk Rock Bowling event here. Anyway, so we have Milo on the show today from The Descendants. This is someone that I've, like any other fan of punk rock and hardcore, this is someone I grew up kind of, I don't want to say worshiping, but like looking up to, fascinated by, like Milo. It's Milo from The Descendants. I remember the Warped Tour when The Descendants were coming back sort of for the first time to Toronto since they had kind of disappeared in the last time they had played around here. And it was mythical. Like, you know, people walking around looking for Milo. And, you know, Milo showed up on stage, and I remember Al from Trigger Happy introducing him, and then Milo pops up, and oh my gosh, it was amazing. So flash forward, you know, a bunch of years, I've gotten to talk to Milo over the years, but you know what? Until I've had the opportunity to kind of sit you down in that turned out of punk chair, look into your eyes and just punish the shit out of you about all the bands and stuff you've done, I don't really think that I've really gotten to know you. So I now know Milo a little bit better. Milo came on the show, we sat, we talked, and it is great. I'm not going to blather on anymore because you're going to be able to hear it in one moment. But before I let you listen to this Milo episode, and once again, shout out to Punk Rock Bowling, get your tickets, go and get your tickets for that. I got to remind you that coming up on May 22nd, now I hear maybe at 9 p.m., I get confirmation because I'm going to have another episode dropping on Monday morning with someone from the show. But the wrestlers will be coming out finally, the TV show that I worked on with the fine folks at Salazar Films and a bunch of other people to kind of make happen, where we just document some of the greatest wrestlers and wrestling stories from around the world happening, wrestling scenes, just trying to show it as the beautiful art form that professional wrestling is. I'm so excited about this thing. I really, really want you to see it. That is going to be happening next Wednesday. I promise you there is some punk rock stuff, especially in the first episode, a lot of punk rock stuff. There's a Neurosis song. We got a Neurosis song on the TV show. Shout out to Scott Kelly, you know, fellow wrestling fan, you know, one of the strongest connections in the punk rock wrestling connection. So you got to see the show. That is next Wednesday. That's it. Okay, I'm going to see you on the other end of this thing. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. I can't believe I'm getting to say this one now, finally. This is a big one for me. This is a huge one for me. I love Milo's voice. Oh, my God. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Milo Aukerman of the Descendants on Turned Out a Punk. Milo, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It was great to be with you again, Damon. It's always been fun to talk to you.
Well, yeah, as I was saying, I have unfortunately for you, but fortunately for me, have the opportunity to punish you in the past about kind of stuff. So this one, though, will be far less intrusive because we're at least separated by a phone line. So you don't have to worry about my beard hair flying in your face as I talk about your career to you.
Right. And I can roll my eyes at all your questions.
You can roll your eyes in disgust this time with impunity.
Yeah.
But Milo, I got to start this off the way I start them all off, which is, how'd you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you ever came across the genre?
Well, I guess, you know, when I was listening to this one station, K-Rock, and you know, they were playing stuff like the Ramones, and I, you know, back then it was kind of like, well, I guess this is punk or whatever. The Ramones are so poppy and everything, but I guess listening to Ramones on K-Rock. But more so than that, I guess, I came into punk via New Wave, so I was a big New Wave fan, and probably my first kind of enlightening experience with punk was when I went to go see Devo play, and it wasn't seeing Devo, it was actually seeing the opening band X play, and it was like, oh, so yeah, this is the thing for me, is seeing X, because Devo were, you know, more new wave band, but X really kind of went into that more. You know, they veered more towards, you know, hardcore punk or whatever. So that was kind of you know, mind blowing for me. I think once I heard X, I started listening more to LA, just LA punk. I became like the LA punk aficionado, and that this would have been in like, you know, 79, 80. I think my exposure to punk was via first this LA band X, and just started listening to Black Flag and the Germs after that. Although at my first actual concert preceded the X concert, because I saw Black Flag play at Pollywog Park in 79, but I didn't know who the hell they were. I was still kind of the new wave kid, and here comes Black Flag playing this picnic with a bunch of families and people throwing food and stuff. And I was like, whoa. But you know, it kind of went over, their music went over my head, 'cause I wasn't really in the punk rock scene, and I was still kind of a new waver. But that, you know, I guess technically that was my first show, was Black Flag at Pollywood Park.
Well, that's such a historic show, too. Like, there's the photos from that show. Like, that's gone on to become one of the more storied early Black Flag shows.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, I mean, I always, you know, it's kind of like name dropping. It's show dropping for me. I'm always going to drop that show, even though I had no clue what was going on, you know?
That's like, it was fated, right? Like, you were fated to do this. Like, that was your first exposure to what would ultimately change so many people's lives because of your entrance into punk rock.
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember how it struck me from a musical or even, you know, kind of a cultural perspective. I hadn't heard their music before. I think culturally it must have struck me as being like, well, these guys are effing shit up. It's pretty cool to see them getting in people's faces. You know, that was kind of like had an impression on me. It was funny. You know, obviously, I think a lot of the band was having fun, and I think even some of the families were having fun throwing stuff too. So it just became this kind of melee that you know kind of has been, you know, talked about ever since. But I think culturally it must have had some impact on me in terms of like, okay, you know, you can behave like us. Like a rotten brat and have fun doing it and make art. So that's cool.
had like X, cause you know, you'd go and see X a little bit after that and Black Flag, had they like shown up on radio in any way at this point, like Rodney on the Rock, or was anyone kind of like playing some of those early Danger House singles or?
Yeah. Yeah. Rodney was playing them. And so basically for me, the progression was go see Devo, see this band X, be like, kind of like, whoa, you know, Billy Zoom is so cool. And then start listening to Rodney's show. And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, that's that band that I just saw. And he's playing Danger House. And those Danger House singles are so cool. They're so, you know, so raw. Cool. Then it was like, you know, X is my favorite band. And all the other bands that Rodney was playing, you know, I was kind of just, who's this? Who's this? You know, this kind of thing. So I had this brief exposure to the Ramones prior to all that, but they struck me as more of like more of a new wave band or just more like, you know, standard rock. I mean, obviously I got more into them after I got into X and just realized, oh, these guys are the, you know, they're the kind of the Bible of the whole thing, you know? But it was really through X and Rodney's show that I started discovering bands like The Germs and Black Flag and you know, some of those other bands. At one point I wanted to get an X t-shirt and they didn't have them. Just like back before you could like just go to the, you know, to the record store.
Hot Topic or whatever.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There was no Hot Topic. Right. And of course, you know, Music Plus or Warehouse, these were the music outlets. They're going to have their ZZ Top shirts, but they're not going to have an X shirt. So I actually made a stencil of the first X album and like spray painted it. And it was like, that was my attempt to make an X shirt. It was trying times back then.
Well, you know, you're just setting the DIY standard right there and then.
Right. It's kind of a hard shirt to stencil too, cause it's like an X, it's a flaming X. So I'm sitting there with an X-Acto knife cutting out, you know, flames on an X, and it was pretty silly.
How did you become exposed to Devo to go to that show? Were they just something on the radio at that point, or had you seen any of the weird video stuff?
I think my friends had started to get into movie wave even before I did. But I was immediately like drawn to it, for, you know, the kind of energy. It was one of these things where I my progression is just went from, you know, kind of like listening to AM pop music to then realizing that, oh man, you can actually turn up a guitar to 11 and you can play fast. And Devo was a kind of a step in that direction, like, you know, with some more aggressive guitars and with, you know, playing faster. And also I think, you know, part of the thing about Devo, which is undeniable for me, is that I was a freaking nerd back then. And so I was like, oh, this is the nerd band. I mean, they're total nerds. You know, I can remember, you know, at one point we all dressed up like Devo, and it's a very cringy moment to think back how you dressed up New Wave or whatever. But still, I mean, it was, you could identify with this band, not only for the music, but just for how big of nerds they were. And that kind of sealed the deal for me too.
Well, I mean, it's like you're saying, like, Devo wasn't Duran Duran or something. Like, these guys were, they're like a punk band. Like, it spawned a whole new wave thing, but, like, that stuff ages so well.
Yeah, I mean, I think you listen to the early stuff, like Uncontrollable Urge, and it's just like, man, that just gets your blood pumping. That we've covered that one because it's just when we first time we played Fun Fest in 2011, we were actually subbing in for Devo, and it was like obviously a big honor. I guess Bob One or Bob Two had broken his arm or something, so we got this headline Fun, and it was like we're filling in for like one of my favorite bands in the world. You know, one of the bands that got me down that road toward punk rock, we covered Uncontrollable Urge, and it's just such a high energy number. It's such a great song. So yeah, I think I was, and actually, you know, once Devo turned more dancey, I wasn't as into them. You know, they really became more of a like a synth pop or synth dance band, and I was just more into like, you know, Are We Not Men and Duty Now, the first two records. Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were you aware of the Descendants? Because they were already kind of going at this point. Like, had you heard that there was this band kind of happening?
So, I mean, I was discovering Rodney's show and you know, basically realizing that there was this whole LA punk scene out there, and actually started going to some shows out in Hollywood. And turns out, you know, in my own class was Bill Stevenson. You know, we were acquaintances. We weren't really close friends, but we knew each other. And he was one day came up to me at lunchtime and said, "Hey, I'm selling this single that my band did," and he sold me a copy of Ride the Wild, Hectic World. And you know, I think I was just like a sponge at that point for anything, you know, new and punk. But I heard it, and they automatically became my favorite band, you know, at that point. And that's how I met Bill, but that's how Bill and I became close friends, is by him selling me that single and then me kind of, you know, intruding upon their little world. And I went to go see them practice at the church, and one time they had this mic set up and no one was singing into it. And I thought, well, how come you guys aren't singing it? I'm going to like do Ride the Wild, or I think I did Hectic World. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. I couldn't really sing, but I think that they thought, well, you know, he knew the words and he's a friend and, you know, he's got some energy there. So they let me kind of stay on at that point. Like, I think it was shortly after that first, you know, time that I stepped to the mic where they said, "Oh, do you just want to be the singer?" And I said, "Sure." You know, so yeah. So that was how I got exposed to them. Yeah.
What was the rest of the material like that they were doing back then, or that you guys were doing back then? Was it like more like the stuff that you know would go on to do, or was it more like that early single?
I'd say most of it was like the early single, but they'd started to write some songs that, you know, maybe just were because I think a lot of that early stuff they were doing was kind of 60s influenced. Frank was a big fan of like the Seeds and the Turtles and some of these 60s, more obscure 60s bands maybe. And he brought that in with songs like Statue of Liberty, which did go on the first record there. So you can hear on that first record a couple songs that survived from the early version of the band, like Statue of Liberty being one, mm-hmm. Parents maybe being another. But I mean, they had started to write more, I would call them music more influenced by the Alley Cats, for example, much more hyperkinetic, and faster. And then we also just started to drink a bunch of coffee, and then the songs just got faster and faster. And so there was a transition there. I'd say that when I joined, most of the songs were more like Ride the Wild or Statue of Liberty. And then it started to become more like I Want to Be a Bear and these other ones later on, you know. So
when you first formed the band, like, had you ever sung in a band at all prior to that? Did you ever jam with any other bands?
No, and I kind of barely knew how to play guitar. I when I got into punk, and I realized, well, maybe I should, I kind of want to see if I can do this. Cause that was the whole, like you said, the DIY thing, like They could do it. You know, maybe I could do it. And I had my friend's older brother played guitar, and I sat him down in front of the stereo and said, "Okay, how do you play this?" And I played him, you know, like X, you know, Johnny Hit and Run Pauline or whatever. And he goes, "Oh, that's easy." You know, and he just shows me this thing called the bar chord. It's like, "Oh, that's a bar chord. Cool." You know, so then I learned about bar chords, and that gets you like a foot into, you know, learning how to play guitar. If you can, you know, if you can basically grasp the neck and put a couple fingers down, you can make a bar chord and that. And so that got me going on guitar, but I hadn't formed a band or anything. And mm-hmm. the only singing I'd ever done was like in musicals growing up or whatever. So yeah, it was, I had no experience, you know, singing. And so that was, I'd say early on, I was probably the least apt person, the least suitable person to be the front man of that band, of any band really, because I just was not very, I didn't have any stage presence. I mean, I was rather shy really to begin with. And so, I think that they decided that, you know, despite the fact that I was probably too shy to actually be effective in the front, that they would give it a shot with me and see how it went, you know, and it took a while, but I guess I finally overcame that shyness. And part of it was just realizing that these songs were so fun to sing and it was a way of getting out whatever frustrations I had. So I just, you'd tap into those kind of frustrations, and that brought something out of you that wouldn't, you know, like kind of a second personality really for me came out of me that I wouldn't normally have. And I'm sure you're aware of, you kind of have the same thing, I'm sure. When you get on stage, it's like a different person comes out. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's funny because, like, you know, talking about Devo, and it's like you think about what was a world like prior to Devo, because then once Devo comes out, everyone who likes that music is influenced by it, right? So it's hard to conceive like a pre-Devo world. In the same way, you're such like the front person's front person, and so iconic in the way you are a front person, that it's just like so amazing to try and think of like what, like who were the people that you were looking at being like, I want to do what that person's doing. Like, who were your influences? Because you are, as I say, like so influential on people like myself.
I mean, my direct rip-off really was Dez. Dez Gadina. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think the thing is because I saw what one of the times when the Descendants had finished practicing, you know, lo and behold, Black Flag, you know, steps into the room and say, they're next up in the practice room. And so I'd finished seeing Black Flag, or I'd finished seeing the Descendants practice, so now I was going to stick around and see Black Flag practice. And, you know, I kind of, you know, plastered myself against one of the walls to be, you know, as kind of like unobtrusive as possible, and listen to them with Dez singing. And actually, I think I was on the floor, and Dez is just towering above me, like, you know, raging into the mic. And, you know, he's just got that fabulous, like sandpaper quality. And that mm-hmm. to me was like, okay, that's cool. And so when I joined the band, it was like, you know, I had some pretty obvious influences early on from Dez. And, you know, so I think Dez mixed with, you know, the Beatles or whatever. You know, I just always wanted to kind of, if I could, inject some melody into what I was doing. And you know, I just had to learn how to sing first, but then tried to inject some melody in there. But yeah, Dez was a huge influence on me.
When you said you were like a new wave kid, were there any local new wave bands that you were into, or was it more just stuff that was kind of hitting on the national level?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think of what was local at the time.
Like,
I mean,
was the Last on your radar at that point, or not yet?
Oh, they came on my radar probably around the time I joined the band.
Okay.
I had a friend that had LA Explosion, and yeah, that was just an amazing record for me.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, and I can't remember whether or not it was like Bill said, "Hey, check out this band, The Last," or whether he said, "Have you heard The Last?" And I said, "Yeah, these guys are great." It might have been just kind of, you know, all in the mix. It might have just been all kind of coincidental, or, you know, happened at the same time. But basically, I mean, The Last was Bill's favorite band, and The Last rapidly mm-hmm. became my favorite band. And they definitely, you know, contributed to our sound. I mean, if you take Black Flag, Germs, and The Last, you're pretty close to kind of what we were trying to achieve, basically. Yeah.
And it's funny, because out of the three bands you mentioned there, The Last are like the one that you know, people just don't talk about, but they seem to be such a key band in the development of people like yourself and the scene that would become like the influential scene.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, I think you have to be receptive to a different, that style of like 60s oriented, almost psychedelic, you know, kind of music. And I, mm-hmm. you know, I probably wasn't as receptive as, say, Frank, because Frank was writing that stuff, and he started the Descendants with Dave Nolte from the last. So I think that mm-hmm. But I think once I heard a lot of the early Descendants material, and then heard the last, it was like, oh yeah, this, you know, it kind of all made sense in terms of a direction to go, and you know, they just were such amazing songwriters, and Joe Nolte's such an amazing singer, and yeah, I think initially I related to them through the Beatles, but then I began to relate to them through the Descendants, basically. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Your high school that you went to is like one of those places that, you know, when I was going to high school, it's like such a storied kind of class of people that came out of there and went into music. Were there like a lot of punks there, like especially before you got into it? Were you noticing like a lot of other kids in a new wave in punk rock, or is it like, were you guys kind of in a minority?
I mean, we were still the minority, but we became aware of other people. I mean, what I was unaware of is how many like hardcore punks were out there, because I was hanging out with all the new wave kids. So, you know, at one point my friend started a new wave club, and it didn't last very long. It was basically, you know, I think the very first thing was, why did this club exist? Well, we wanted to listen to new wave together or whatever. And, but I think the very first meeting that he organized, the punks came too. And then I could see these other people, and a couple of them were older than us. And they were in like one, if you've ever heard of, Slovenly Peter, they had a band before that called Toxic Shock. And so the singer, so the singer from Toxic Shock shows up at our new wave thing. And I'm thinking, I was thinking, who is this guy? And then later I come to realize, well, he was in a punk band, but some of the punks showed up to this new wave thing. And I got a good feel for, you know, what was at the school in terms of punkers versus new wave people. But, I wasn't really hanging with the punkers really. I was hanging more with the new waivers, and didn't, mm-hmm. and then even when I joined the Descendants, then I was just hanging with the Descendants. Like we were pretty tight, thick as thieves, but it wasn't like I was hanging with any of their punks at the school that much. But yeah, there was a decent, I think for 1979, 1980, it was a pretty decent, crew there.
Did you feel at any point like the new wave kids were upset that you got into punk rock and that you were kind of going towards a more hardcore thing?
No, because I think we would go in, like a lot of us would just go to see shows in Hollywood because, you know, it was close by and you wouldn't have to go see like a band in an arena. So, I mean, a lot of some of the new wave bands were getting so big that you had to go see them in big places that were too big, like Devo or whatever. But we would go see bands at the Starwood or the Whiskey. And I think my friends, while we came in through the new wave, we were starting to realize that that some of these other bands that played at the smaller clubs were really more on the, you know, cutting edge or whatever, that were, you know, playing more punk style music. So I would go out to Hollywood with my friends, and we'd see, you know, the X or the Blasters or, you know, the Chiefs, Germs. And so I think we all kind of gravitated that way, to the point where I felt like, I don't think any of us could ever consider ourselves punkers per se, but that we were basically new wave kids who liked a lot of punk too. You know, we just kind of like crossed over basically. But we crossed over, but we weren't necessarily going to go get Mohawks or anything like that, you know. But some of the first shows that I would see would be shows at the Starwood, which was a club back then that put on, you know, X all the time and, mm-hmm. and the Blasters. And I'd see shows at the Whiskey and eventually started going down to the Cuckoo's Nest. Once I started to go see the Descendants play the Cuckoo's Nest down in Orange County became a place to go as well. So yeah, we were close enough to these places to expose ourselves to different music that maybe we wouldn't have, you know, had a chance to hear otherwise. You know, like we're all, like I said, we were these new wave kids, but we decided to branch out into, you know, more hard edge stuff basically.
Well, yeah, it's 'cause it always gets taken up, and you know, I think it's John Doe from X actually who brings it up a lot in these documentaries about how violent the LA scene became, like kind of right around the time you're getting into it, you know, when the Orange County invasion, and it became more about hardcore and less about punk rock and stuff. Yeah. How did it look when you were getting into it at that time? Like, did you get a sense of that things were changing, like a resentment from the older punks, or is that something that's just kind of been added as time has gone on to the history books?
I mean, I definitely would hear about, you know, people getting beat up just for having long hair, but I never experienced, like, because I didn't really shave my head or anything. I showed up with just regular late 70s hair, which is probably too long for some bald headed punk. I wasn't that interested in looking the part. I just wanted to hear the music, and so I would go to the shows and I would just sit on the lip of the stage right at the front, and all these people were slamming behind me, and I was just like totally focused on the band. And occasionally you get an elbow in the back, but it's like, no, I'm there to watch the band, and I'd stay in front of the pit and do that. I remember seeing the Germs at the Starwood, and I was just, you know, in awe of what they were doing. But at the same time, then I look back in the pit, and there's some guy with a bunch of chains wrapped around his fist. And I look, and I was like in shock, like, oh my God, this guy's, you know, going to go bloody somebody. And he just looks at me like, fuck you, don't come near me, this kind of thing. And I just turned right back around like, okay, these are where my eyes need to be. My eyes need to be straight ahead at the band, you know, enjoying that and not so much in the pit, you know. So I think for me, basically, I think the music was so, to me, all-absorbing that I didn't worry so much about, you know, what was going on back in the back of the clubs, you know, whether there was people getting beat up or blood being spilled. It was more just like me being in front of the stage, and up there things were better. Things weren't so violent because we just watched the band basically. Yeah.
What, like, was there a particular bands that this kind of stuff would gravitate towards? Like, were certain shows more kind of like you had to worry about watching the band and not looking around you more than others? Or was it what were the different like scenes that were kind of happening around that time?
I mean, definitely, you know, something like the Germs brought out the pretty hardcore kids. And you know, like the Germs show that I saw, like I said, there was definitely a pit, and there was definitely, people had gotten in with some weapons, you know, but, you know, you might go see a band like the Minutemen and not have to worry as much about that. I mean, the Minutemen, you know, were great and hyperkinetic, but they may have had some people slamming at their shows, but they tended to attract, you know, a little bit more, you know, just people who wanted to see them as opposed to people who wanted to kind of bash in skulls, you know? But yeah, you know, there was a lot of, punk happening at that time. And I think, it started to kind of turn more into like a slam pit as opposed to like watch the band kind of thing. And like I said, I didn't really take heed of any kind of violent possibilities, although I know they existed. So I just kind of did the music thing.
Absolutely. Well, what about the Descendants? Like, what was the fan base that was attracted to the band, I guess, before you joined and after you joined? Like, was it like kind of Paisley Underground on that early 7-inch, or like the proto, I guess, Paisley Underground scene?
No, I don't think so. You know what? I don't even know who liked us early on. Because, you know, let's face it, we were opening up on bills that were like, you know, 8 bands, and we were like the opening band. So
yeah.
You know, I couldn't get a beat on who liked us back then, because you know, when we were playing, it was a fairly empty room. I mean, I think once we started to play out and get a little bigger, and we were, say, opening for Minor Threat, well, then, I think we kind of, I would hope that we would share some of those same fans of that style of music, you know, of the hardcore music. But yeah, I mean, I don't really have a clue what our fan base was back then.
Because it seems that, like, at a certain point, SST got a unique fan base, just like it almost like there were SST fans as like a subsect of punk rock fans.
Yeah, I mean, the early SST is kind of defined by what Black Flag did, and that to me is my favorite period for them is when it was Black Flag and Minutemen and Saccharine
Stains
Trust.
And
yeah, Bad Brains, Husker put out all those records on SST. I mean, so for a while, I mean, I don't know what a typical SST label fan would be, but they struck a good, all I can say is that early on they struck a good balance between, just like straight up punk rock and people who were, you know, kind of foraying, doing these forays out into experimental stuff, or not even experimental, just kind of like changing the set, making their sound, you know, different and unique, but, you know, still staying within like that kind of DIY punk ethic. And that's the period that I really liked for them, is like when they had bands like Saccharine Trust and Minutemen and you know, us, the Bad Brains, Black Flag. Those were just amazing. You know, it's just an amazing set of bands that all sounded different. You know, there was no that, maybe that's the one thing about SST that I think that sets it apart. And maybe that's what an SST fan would be, is just someone who has an open mind to things that aren't just, you know, things that aren't just the Sex Pistols or whatever, you know, things that aren't just straight up, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 punk rock, you know.
Well, and it's amazing. Like, if you break down like the band list of bands, if you also lump in Sonic Youth and the Meat Puppets in there too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's like the Rosetta Stone for alternative music. Like, you can kind of like, you know, like country rock with the Meat Puppets, like, you know, pop punk with yourselves, like all the bands that would jettison or sort of birth all these amazing scenes are all on that label at one time.
Yeah. Yeah. And they, I mean, I it may be, because, you know, everyone wanted to be on SST. They saw that they had their act together, and that, you know, that they were this DIY label that actually, you know, could do the right job, and so I think they were able to attract just a lot of different kinds of bands. And I think also the you know, having Greg and those guys be just fans of a lot of different kind of music, so that it's kind of like a, you know, the not only you know, promoting eclecticism, but also having a name out there that drew eclectic acts in there as well. Seems like a perfect world. And it just was, you know, kind of, I just feel grateful that I could be a part of it.
Well, I guess before SST Records though, you were on New Alliance Records. Like, you know, you mentioned Minutemen earlier. Were you fans of them? Was that like,
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were huge fans of the Minutemen. I mean, we toured our first, I'm going to call it a tour, but it's just, we went up to the Bay Area. It was like our first foray out of LA, really, was up to the Bay Area, where we took a small van up to San Francisco with the Minutemen in there with us. So they were, you know, they were heroes of ours. And, you know, when they were able to put our record out, we just thought that's perfect, you know, cause you know, Watt was such a supporter of our band, and we just love them as musicians. So that was kind of like a perfect match for us. So yeah, and then, you know, they had put out other stuff, like they put out this band called Salvation Army that I thought was really cool too, and it was just kind of the same approach as what SST was doing. It was like, if it's good music, we're going to put it out. We don't care whether they're psychedelic or, you know, punk or whatever. And you know, Salvation Army was definitely more in the poppy psychedelic area, but you know, they saw that they'd written some good songs, and so they put that out. So you know, between them, Saccharine Trust, Minutemen, I mean, I think, you know, a lot, New Alliance had a good thing going too.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Was it like, you know, when you were kind of signing this record label, you're one of the first bands on it, like, you know, other than Salvation Army and stuff. Did it feel like it was like a big step for you to get signed to this label? Like, were you like, holy shit, I'm in the music industry now?
I don't know if it struck me that way, because the way those labels were run were definitely not like, you know, some A&R guy shows up and, hey,
yeah.
You know, here's a line of Coke, or here, let's go wine and dine. You know, it was Watt, you know, and so it's kind of like, yeah. You know, I think Watt was like, hey, we could put out your record. Oh, yeah, cool. That sounds like a good idea. You know, so I never really felt like I was in the industry in that sense, because it was just like a friend from the scene who happened to like what we did and we had the know-how to put out a record for us, you know? So it's kind of nice that way, 'cause it didn't, you know, I think one thing it did is it kept me from ever, you know, getting too high and mighty about like, oh, I'm a musician now. I never really felt like I was a musician and I never really felt like I was in the music industry. I just always felt like, this is a bunch of friends who help each other out and, you know, like, support each other at shows and, you know, and kind of create a musical space that people can inhabit. That to me was more important than, you know, me kind of looking in the mirror going, hey, I'm a musician now. 'Cause I never really felt that way.
Well, you know, and I guess you'd done those two singles, but it's that LP that, you know, would change the world, like change my world, change, I think, a lot of people I know when they would hear that record when it came out. So it's funny how, like, you know, even though you never looked at yourself as being part of the music industry, you would ultimately end up shaping a good chunk of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we probably benefited from just making music for ourselves and just, mm-hmm. you know, like, And not trying to get big, just trying to make songs that we liked and you know, trying to be as tight a band as we could because I think that kind of shows through in that first record. I mean, 'cause that first record we played those songs over the course of a year, just over and over again, and by the time we went in to record them, it was, you know, we really, you know, tightened everything up quite a bit. I think we just, that was important for us just to kind of like not get too big about ourselves and just try, you know, try to put our nose to the grindstone and make it, you know, make it happen more organically. So that's what I remember about that record, is how organic it was to kind of put it together, because we just freaking practice like, you know, 7 days a week or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Is it like, how much, you know, you're saying it's organic, how much thought went into the sequencing of it though? Did any thought go into that?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's something that I think Bill, you know, at that point he started to, he wasn't, you know, it's still Spot was the producer, but I think Bill probably had some, say in terms of the sequencing. I was completely out of the loop on that, because as the name of the record says, I was already off at school.
Indicate, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we recorded in June, and then I had to go down to school in August or September. So I didn't actually hear the final product until I was already down at San Diego, at UC San Diego. In fact, bizarrely enough, I was living off campus in a family's house. I just rented a room from a family. And one of the sons of the family came in and said, hey, I just heard your record. I was like, what? I didn't know it was out, you know? He said, you haven't heard your own record? I said, no, I haven't heard my own record. I'm, you know, I left LA and they didn't send me anything. So he says, well, come down the street. So he invites me down the street to his friend's house where they're spinning, you know, Milo Goes to College. And I'm just, they must have thought it was bizarre, because I walked in and they put the record in and I was like, I was in the zone for like the next 25 minutes, and they're just, you know, looking at me like, this guy's a nut. 'Cause I was just like, I hadn't heard any of it. I hadn't heard, I guess I'd probably heard some rough mixes, but I hadn't heard anything beyond that. And then to have this guy put the needle down on this thing, you know, and I'm in this strange person's house who I've never met before. So that was kind of a surreal moment.
How what was it like hearing it for the first time? Like, was it what you expected? Like, was it, you know, it's cause such, once again, an iconic thing.
Well, I think it set the tone for how I would listen to my records from then on, which is kind of go meh. I mean, I think, you know, you listen to your own stuff and you're so locked into some, you know, kind of technical performance of it that it's hard for you to kind of enjoy it. So I can definitely say I didn't enjoy it. When the guy put the needle down, I was literally just like listening to like, okay, did this turn out at all like I, you know, wanted it to turn out or imagined it to turn out? And I wasn't really you can't really enjoy your own music, and probably not for some number of years afterwards, you know, to really enjoy it. And so I think that's a pretty common thing for people who make records. It's like you have to distance yourself from it for a while because it, you know, it never turns out exactly the way you want it to, for sure.
How much were you walking away from when you decided to go to college? Like, was the, like, I know you said you never considered yourself part of the music industry, but like, did it feel like this could be a career if you kept going down that path? Or were you kind of just like, no, this was something that happened and I'm going to go do this?
Yeah, I just felt like it was something that happened and that we were able to document, we were able to document that phase of the band. And I felt like having it as a document was a satisfying thing, you know? So that to me was as far as I took it. Like, yeah, cool. We made a record and it, you know, but it never really was like, oh, we made a record and now we're going to get big and none of that. I mean, and it, not even, we made a record and now we're going to tour. Cause no, we weren't going to tour. I mean, I was going to, you know, go to school. And we did a handful of shows, just one-off shows over the next year. I think maybe three shows in 1982, 1983, where I would, you know, I would come up from San Diego to LA and we would do shows and, you know, that was the end of it. That was pretty much the end of it because Bill had joined Black Flag at that point. So that meant that we weren't going to be doing a lot more shows. And of course I was down, I think they kind of realized, well, we needed to leave him alone because he's trying to be a student now. So yeah, we did a handful of shows and they had another singer for a while. They had Ray Cooper singing and they were able to do more than a few shows. They were able to do some shows just with Ray, but I don't think that was very long lived. I don't think Ray was like, he was that into it. He was doing it kind of like as a way of saying, you know, he was in Descent. I mean, it was one of these things like he felt really happy to be in the band, but he didn't want to be the singer. He wanted to be a guitar player, really. So yeah, that's what he eventually became, you know?
Yeah. Like, and also I guess it's like you're stepping into someone's shoes, like even though, you know, like it's only one album deep, but you know, your caricature is on the cover.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that made it harder to kind of say, oh, we're just going to get a new singer. You know, I mean,
yeah,
that was, you know, that wasn't my idea. I think it was Bill's idea. And I kind of thought, well, okay, if that's what you want to do. But I think it did, you know, I think it was actually really sweet of him to do it because, you know, his whole thing, if you look at the cover, it's actually supposed to be designed almost like a card, like a greeting card, where it's like, this is his congratulations, you're going to go off to school card to me. And that's how it was designed to be. So it was a sweet thing that he was doing for me. We had become fast friends at that point. And I think he was trying to document it with the record actually, but it definitely didn't do them any service in the long run because then they, you know, in terms of getting another singer for the Descendants or, you know, with all coming around the corner, you know, it was all kind of, you know, there's the iconography of that silly little drawing that probably makes it harder to just kind of swap out singers.
Oh yeah, no, it's got to be like, it's up there with like, you know, well, there's like the Rolling Stones lips, like the Black Flag bars, the Milo drawing.
Yep. Yeah, it's weird. I think it's just because it's so simple, you know, like some kid can just draw it and you can make tattoos of it like nothing, you know.
Yeah, and it also, like, as Chris Harry's kind of illustrated, like, it lends itself to show up in, like, different situations. Like, it's yeah. It's like it's quite brilliant for something that was just kind of just meant to be a tribute to you.
Yeah, because I think for a while there we thought, oh, this is funny. We'll put this little stick figure on the cover. But then when it came time to do a record in 85, I Don't Want to Grow Up, then the SSC guys are like, cool, okay, so we can make a baby with his head, you know. And it's like, so then we're like, really, we're gonna resurrect this stick figure? And then ever since, it's like, well, we can do this with the guy, and we can do this. So, yeah, it became a thing. We tried to steer clear of it with Enjoy and with All, but then, you know, with Everything Sucks, the label was back, and they're like, hey, let's do, you know, let's use the Milo head. So I think, you know, after much eye-rolling in terms of all this, we kind of realized, okay, well, we're gonna kind of, like, embrace it. And the main reason to embrace is, like you said, it's actually an outlet for creativity for us, is because mm-hmm. we make, you know, you think about, oh, well, we can not make a shirt for this next tour, or we could make a shirt and, you know, have another riff on the Milo head. So we try to riff out on it whenever we can.
When you got down to San Diego, did you try and get involved in that punk scene there, like Battalion of Saints and any of that stuff, or you're just kind of like, I'm a student now?
Oh, I would go to see shows. That was the thing. It's like, I left this punk rock band, but then I was just immediately like, you know, became a punk rock fan down in San Diego. And I went and saw, you know, saw the Bad Brains, I saw the TSOL down there, saw the Battalion of Saints. I'd see whatever band came through town, really. So I was still kind of really maintaining close contact with, you know, the scene, if there is a scene, seeing bands. So yeah. And then, I actually, when I was down there for grad school, because then I went down to grad school in the late 80s, and at that point I did in fact join another band called Milestone, and we put out a teeny little record. It wasn't even like a record that we recorded in a studio. It was just like a live performance in a radio studio, a radio station, but that someone decided, you know, that they would put out. So yeah. That was my only other foray into non-Descendants bandage was this band called Milestone. And, you know, I think I'm just, one thing is once you play with like Bill and Stefan and Carl, you kind of, and then it ruins any other band for you. Cause it's like, well, how can I,
yeah,
you know, how can any other, you know, players really match up?
Yeah.
So I, you know, like when Milestone, I left the band after about a year, cause I just realized, well, Unless we just do a lot of woodshedding, we've kind of reached our point of goodness, and you know, and so then I thought, well, I'm trying to get my degree, I'm trying to get my PhD, and it's become a bit of a time commitment to trying to get if the band's going to get better or am I going to write my PhD? So I had to make a choice to write my PhD over make this band get better, you know.
Did you ever have the temptation when you were first down there to try and do something like that, or
when I'm down where?
When you first went off to school, did you ever have a temptation to try and do another band, or like was that like, you know, obviously you didn't, but like was that ever in the cards those early university years?
I guess I sat in with this. There was a band down there called The Insolence, and I think they might have put out a single.
On Mystic, right? Maybe
on Mystic. Yeah, I think they put out a single on Mystic. And I was I was roommates with Todd. So in fact, when Todd started playing with The Insolence, I said, you know what, I could throw a couple keys in there, you know. So they had some organ set up, and I would play a little organ. I think the only way they agreed to it is that TSOL had started playing with keys, and so they thought, well, yeah, let's throw some keys in there. I sat in with them a little bit. And I think what this is all leading to is that probably I was unable to shake the bug, so to speak.
Yeah.
So I was sitting there like, oh, I still want to be doing this, you know? So I would sit in with The Insolence, or, you know, and later on I was in this other band, Milestone. It was hard for me to just kind of shake it out of my blood. And that, you know, that's probably why I'm still doing it now. It's like, it's something that was kind of meant to be, I guess.
Well, yeah, you're from that first Black Flag kind of run-in way back when at that park.
Yeah, all the way from that, yeah. And actually, yeah, in the when I was down at school, Bill called me and said, "Hey, Black Flag's recording a record. I want you to do, you know, backing vocals on it." And you know, I jumped at the opportunity, and that was for Loose Nut. So it's kind of like, you know, I could have said, you know, I'm not doing the music anymore, just leave me alone. But no, I was still all in. I just didn't have a vehicle at that point because, you know, they were doing Black Flag and because I was doing my thing. But it was, I think all these little events that happened were for a reason. I think for the reasons being, Bill and I were meant to be friends forever. And and I think the Descendants were, I was meant to continue to develop my musical self in some way, either through just kind of like participating with whatever Bill tossed my way, or just, you know, reforming the band, which we did numerous times, obviously.
San Diego, I've kind of heard from other people that were around kind of in the time period you're down there, describe that scene as being like maybe even hairier than the LA scene was in terms of violence and stuff like that and skinhead stuff. Did you see that at all when you were down there, especially that TOSOL show and shows like that?
No, I didn't. To me, it seemed about the same. It was definitely people slamming, you know, and whatnot. But again, I don't know. I guess me with shows, I treat a show as an opportunity to kind of commune with a band, not commune with an audience so much. And so I, at the TSOL show, there I was at the front of the stage, you know, I saw the Misfits down there on their very last tour. And you know, there I am right in front of, I guess, Doyle. And he's just like, he's got his guitar and he's like, every chord change, he's like punching upward with his fret hand, you know, voyage, voyage. And I'm just sitting there, you know, totally mesmerized by, and there's the violence right there. I mean, he's being violent with his guitar. And so that's, to me, that's a violence that I can embrace and let it get me charged, you know. And I'm sure there was violence going on behind me, but I wasn't really paying any attention.
Yeah, no. Better look at that violence that's happening on stage.
Yeah.
When you kind of came back for, you know, obviously I'm jumping ahead, and this has been incredible, and I'm not going to keep you all day because I know you got to go out there and live your life. But would you come back at some point, Milo, for a part two?
Yeah, sure. No problem. Yeah.
But one thing I wanted to talk about, like before I let you go, was the idea when you guys came back and did Everything Sucks. There'd been like a gap between the last time you had done Descendants stuff, right? Like you did some all backup vocals, I think, between the two.
Yeah.
But in that gap, like that's when, you know, the music that the scene you had been, you know, kind of key and help forming had kind of come to full blossom, you know, and like you came back to a world where punk rock had gone mainstream and it had blown up. Like, were you kind of aware of that stuff happening? You must have been aware of it happening, but like how much of that was kind of coming into your life? Like, were people recognizing you more post kind of Nirvana, post Green Day?
I don't think people were recognizing me, but I guess I was reading, you know, interviews where people were, you know, hey, there's this band that influenced us. At that point, it was probably the first time that I realized that we had influenced, you know, this other generation, that we'd influenced these other younger kids to do stuff. And that was, you know, I mean, I was gratifying. I was very gratified by that. But I think part of it was also just trying to keep in touch with Bill and actually finally writing some more songs myself. Just like I hadn't really written a lot of songs, and I found myself in an environment. I was living in Wisconsin where I was kind of bubbling over with frustration from my professional career. And I decided, you know, I don't know if I decided, but I just, what emerged from that was some songs that I'd written that started getting written. And so I thought, well, I got these songs, so I should talk to Bill. And, you know, he's always been, you know, receptive to what could be done, you know? And at that point, they were on Interscope, but they'd been dropped by Interscope. They got bought out from Interscope, all did. And then, and then they were, you know, shopping around for another label, and he said, well, we could probably, you know, make a Descendants record while we make an all record and make a Descendants record, like make both basically. And I said, okay, cool, you know, and that's the way it worked, basically, is that we put out the Descendants record on Epitaph, and then they put out an All record after that, so.
Has it always been important to you to kind of have the two worlds that you can kind of jump back and forth between? Like, do you think that is something, you know, that's good for your psyche? Like, do you need that? I mean,
I think that it has been good for me because, I mean, you can always point to like, well, you could have gotten further in either field. I could have gotten further by just, you know, putting all my eggs in the one basket. I mean, I definitely, you know, in science, I probably shot myself in the foot many times, you know, by not focusing enough in that area while I was off on tour with the band or whatever with the band. So, I guess you could, say that that it was to my detriment on one level, but I also think it was to my benefit on another level because I feel like I've never had the kind of rock and roll lifestyle that just destroys people and that destroys bands, destroys many bands. Mm-hmm. And one thing we've discovered, you know, as of late is just that we can, the longevity of our band, we can ascribe to having put, you know, a certain amount of space between each of us and just allow us room to breathe as people, as individuals. And boy, did they ever let me room to breathe over the years. they left me more than enough room to breathe. And I think, you know, we're at the period now where everyone wants that as well in the band. And we want to be able to play with the band, but have lives, have family. And that's what we've been able to do. We were never able to do that back in the 80s. I mean, back in the 80s, it was like, okay, jump in your van. And, you know, 3 months later, okay, we're home. Who are we? Who are we at that point? You know, you don't even know who the hell you are. So I think I think having it be more on off allows you to be a human. It allows you to live a life as opposed to, you know, be so all consumed with this one thing that, I mean, if there's an artist out there who can be all consumed with their music and make the rest of their life work, more power to them. But it's really hard to do. And so I think we kind of stumbled upon, you know, a way where we could have a life outside of music, but still, you know, kind of have a really, really exciting life still in music as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, Milo, this has honestly been, you know, like a third time I've gotten to do this to you, but this has been my most favorite out of all of them.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But will you come back for part two at some point down the road?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, whenever you want to do it, we'll do it.
Awesome. Well, I cannot wait to play with you again, my friend.
Yeah, yeah. When are you guys playing around?
Same day as you are, Punk Rock Bowling.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to make sure I'll make sure to be side staging.
That will be amazing. We're two on before you, so don't worry. Okay. You don't have to show up too early.
Yeah, yeah. If you were on right before us, that's the worst because then it's like I'm off preparing. but two before us, I'll be side stage for that for sure.
Yeah. Then poor refuse. They don't get it, but I get it. Coming up, Damien.
Yeah.
Thank you, Milo, for coming on the show. When you heard right there, we got more to get to with Milo. Milo will be back for some part twos and threes in the future because a lot of stones left to unturn with that guy. A lot of stones left to unturn. But I really feel like that's a special one for me. That was such a special one to get to do. So thank you so much to Vanessa. See everyone at Punk Rock Bowling. This is going to be a great time. But I guess I'm going to be seeing you before I see you at Punk Rock Bowling because coming out on Monday on this Turned Out of Punk podcast feed in celebration of the wrestlers coming out on May 22nd. A lot of dates and stuff I'm throwing out at you this week. I'm sorry for giving you so many dates to have to follow, but this is worth it because coming out on Monday, Darby Allin, who's one of the stars of the first episode of the wrestlers, which is coming out on Wednesday, once again at 9 p.m. or 10 p.m., 9 p.m. I think now they're telling me next Wednesday on Viceland, the wrestlers will be premiering. one of the stars, Darby Allin. I'm going to have a podcast with him dropping on Monday, and it is awesome. My gosh, this is a great companion piece to the first episode of The Wrestlers. And then after The Wrestlers airs, you can check out on Post Wrestling and their feed. I'm going to be doing kind of like a little conversation with my friend John Pollock, my good buddy John Pollock, about each episode of The Wrestlers after they happen. So you can check out all that good stuff. There's so much content for you. Oh, and I'm just adding to that content pile constantly over here at Turnout of Punk. But you know what? I promise you, it's always going to be pretty good content. It's always going to be reliable. It's not going to be, here's the thing I was thinking about today with Turnout of Punk. It's not going to be the best interview that you've ever done, maybe, but my God, will it be the most different interview you've ever done. You know, that's what I'm hoping. Anyway, that's it. Go out there and sign your organ donor cards, create your own culture, tell all your friends about this podcast. Thank you again to Vanessa. Thank you to Milo. Thank you to Tristan. Thank you to Amy. Thank you to Brian. Thank you to, and I feel like Robert, I'm just seeing all the people I see out there, but a lot of people to thank. Thank you to everyone for believing in this wrestler show. I'm so, so excited for you to see this thing. If you're listening to this show Friday when this podcast dropped, there should be a trailer going out today too. So hopefully you get a chance to check out the new trailer. And then next week, The Wrestlers. Woo, woo. And then Vegas. I'm going to be in Vegas. Punk Rock Bowling. Suburban Fight. This is a Suburban Fight show. We'll be talking about that on the Darby Allin episode. Anyway, that's it. I love you. Thanks for listening.